recording?
Do I have a big shadow on my face again?
No, but you're not in front of the mic, so there we go. There'll never be a shadow in front of your face at the top as bright as that. I was all right with the lights on, but then you put that jacket on, I'm like, I'm going to need some sunglasses.
Dude, why are you bullying me?
Bro, dude. I'm not bullying you. It's a lovely jacket. It is.
I'm styling the yellow,
hey,
okay?
I dig it. We've
you
both
just
got
to commit.
I know.
Bright colors, commit.
I still don't think that this is... Consider it as practice.
I'm always wearing black, so you know.
You can practice talking into the microphone.
Listen, let's get started.
We're started. This is it. This is the first 5 minutes of the podcast. Is me grilling you. Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. I'm going to make my cushion sorted out. I hope you enjoyed the fights. We enjoyed the fights. We actually, as we were watching them, we said, we should be recording ourselves watching these, because we were sat in here, weren't we, watching them on that TV. And
yeah.
I was watching us, like, from your perspective. We were like, oh my God. really, really solid fights. A great night of fights. Before we get started, we need to give our sponsors a shout out. And I was wrong last week. I said Athlete Factory. Because that's what it saved in my phone as, because that's where, you know, when we're heading up to the Athlete, I just go, Athlete Factory, and it takes me there. It's not. Athlete Factory's gone. It's Vortex now. Vortex, I dig it. So Vortex is the academy, and then there's the Vortex meal prep stuff as well.
Yeah.
Come on, you educate me.
That's where the Biscoff cheesecake is.
It's ridiculous.
It's like, it's awesome.
It's so good.
I just look forward to it.
He actually did me beans on toast, didn't he? Was it last time?
Yeah,
we went? So
yeah, you got beans on toast one time.
So shout out to Paul, who, you know, obviously in spite of, we're going to talk about it, of course, but in spite of Paddy not winning, he still, like, physically looked great, healthy on the scales. I mean, that body shot that he took would have caused anybody problems. But yeah. Paul does a great job, as you saw with Paddy's conditioning. And as you will with a lot of other guys from Next Gen, as we've mentioned, like Luke Riley and Adam Cullen and Nathaniel. Why am I forgetting his name?
Nathan Fletcher.
Fletcher, that's it. I always get Nathaniel.
Yeah, I know,
and
that
Nathan,
happens to me too.
I always get them mixed up. They're both like such like quiet, nice, lovely individuals. And loads of good fighters coming out of there. And obviously, Liam Gittins as well. Great fighter. Paul Reed works with all of them, does a great job. Check out Vortex. Give him a follow on Instagram.
I mean, he also works with me.
Well, of course, but, you know, I mean, you're easy to work with because,
I'm wearing bright yellow and you still forgot to mention me.
I don't need to mention you. You're right here on the podcast. And our other sponsor, Zapply. These guys are fantastic. I've been using, this is actually the old packaging, the T1. I've been using this since we had it in Vegas, didn't we, the last time we went out there. It's just a game changer, to be honest. So basically, like, I have it first thing in the morning. I've actually just put a dash in this coffee as well. So I have a teaspoon of the creatine in my coffee in the morning. And then after breakfast, I have the T1. Fat soluble vitamins. So make sure you have them after your first meal of the day. But it's just super easy. Just three of these. I've already got my creatine in my system from the coffee in the morning. I get a good workout. And, like, I mean, I'm sleeping on to.
Yeah.
Like, I'm...
And, like, the fact that it's so much easier makes you more consistent with it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've been traveling, like, I've been having some different supplements and stuff, and, like, taking them, you get the bottle, it's so
all organized out.
Yeah, so, like, before, I have to put them, like, in a Ziploc bag, and it's just so annoying. And with that, it's...
I was doing the same. I was carrying, like, what, 5 or 6 different bottles around in a little bag. And every day it was like the process of going and counting them out and, how many have I had this day? And it was just it's just been so much more straightforward with Zapply. Tryzapply.com is the website. I actually noticed they're working with a bunch of other people as well. Mm. Carl Froch is on there. Remy Bonjasky, I've actually got an action figure of Remy just there. Look, he's the flying knee. Grab it for me. Can you grab it? Look at that. I've even got a Remy Bonjasky action figure.
It's going to
go on top
of
my lid. It's a bit dusty there. Look at that. I only see the dust when we turn the lights on in here. There we go. Look at that. Carl Froch, Derrida, has been using their stuff as well. Really solid stuff. 14 ingredients, vitamin D3, zinc, magnesium, ashwagandha, a bunch of other stuff. About 200,000 people are using this. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee as well, and the code is OUTLAW15. Go and check them out. Try Zapply.com. Great stuff. Get yourself some T1. Get yourself some creatine. That's your morning routine. And honestly, I am feeling really good this year. It's just kind of set me up for the year. I'm glad I started it at the end of last year, because I'm already now starting to... I was lifting last night, wasn't I? I'm just buzzing. And then I'm sleeping like, what was it, Saturday? Because I went upstairs early because I'm like...
Oh, dude, you went to sleep at like 8.
And slept for like 14 hours.
You went like at 10 out. The next morning.
Out.
I was like, what is going on?
It's good though. I feel good. I feel, I just feel like just clear, you know? I'm into it. Thank you very much, Zapply. It's been a game changer. Okay. Shall we talk about some of these fights? UFC... 324.
We shall.
Oh, hang on. She's got notes. She's done her own work.
No, because I did like badly. Half the notes.
Badly. What are your picks? My picks were terrible. But that's, you know.
I think I go back in time. I would still pick Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's the better fighter.
That one swung back and forth a little bit. Like, I thought Allen was, he was doing good things, and he had, like we talked about, he had a good game plan, and he was doing the right things. But, like, for me, the emotion of Gene Silva just kind of swings him so far from one way to another. And I just kind of felt like in that fight against Lopez, there were moments in that fight where he just looked helpless.
Yeah.
You know? And I think any fighter that kind of experiences that, especially when they're already picturing themselves as being... capable to beat anybody in the division, and then all of a sudden you run into something that just feels just feels like unbeatable for you in the near future. Like, that's why I felt like the emotion coming out when he saw the belt. I'll be honest, I didn't look at him going, oh, he's just so emotional about the journey and excited about, you know, hope, like, one day getting his hands on the belt. That to me looked like someone having a breakdown because they're realizing that they might never get a hold of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my first reaction as soon as I saw it. I was sitting here, I was watching it on that screen, and I just thought, I'm just like, man, I feel like he would have been reacting that way had he beaten Lopez. He would have been looking at the belt like, yeah, you're mine. I am coming for that. Whereas it was like a breakdown, like he might not be able to achieve it.
Yeah, but after I saw the video that he posted, that was AI with all that
he's
going on.
He's a bit mad,
on,
isn't he? He's a bit like...
It didn't really surprise me anymore, you know?
I don't know.
After seeing that, I felt like,
so in fact,
I need to get more weird now
to
hit that again.
Well, we need to get the comments. We need to get people in the comments to let us know what they think. But also, I've not spoken to Jamie about this. What was he casting? Was he casting spells? What was the drawing on his leg?
Yeah,
like there were things at the face-off when Silva walked up and Arnold Allen was doing the Harry Potter stuff, and he was like,
"Dude, but how he timed it! Yeah. I watched it like so many times."
But it was like it was so convincing from Arnold Allen's part. I'm not sure whether he's got some pagan bloodline or something, and he was actually casting some spells, or whether he was just trying to provoke Silva.
That would be a bit of both.
But then. And in fact, this might have been cut out because I don't know how much they saw on Paramount, right? I know there was a lot of the stuff was cut out on Paramount. But you remember when he was standing in his corner, he walked in before they started the announcements or anything, and he pulled up his shorts leg. Did you see this, Jamie? You got to go back and watch it. And he had like a drawing on his leg, like a sigil, like a protection symbol on his leg that was clearly Sharpie. It wasn't a tattoo. And it was like he pulled his leg up and was like showing Gene Silva, like.
And then he pulled it up like several times.
It was really,
oh no, look, but like, look at it.
It was really hard. It's my first question for Arnold when I see him again. I'm like, are you casting spells, or are you punking him? That was really interesting. But I kind of felt like there was a bit of an exchange right at the end of the first round. I felt like Arnold was doing well all the way through. I do need to say one thing. Arnold Almighty Allen It's the wrong way round. It's got to be on Almighty Arnold Allen. Almighty should be at the top. I think that's the main switch that he needs. That's the thing that's holding him back from that championship peak. His nickname's in the wrong place. Arnold Almighty Allen. Almighty Arnold Allen. Am I wrong? Am I wrong? I don't think I'm wrong. It's more feedback I'm going to give him.
All right.
I thought he started off well. But then towards the end of the first round, there was an exchange and he kind of came off awkwardly, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then did he not go to touch gloves with him? And there was like fronted up and he shoved him? Or was that the end of the second round?
I think it was...
It was just, there was a moment at the end of the first round where I kind of felt Arnold Allen's confidence shift a little bit. And Silva start the second round like...
Yeah, I think it might have been the end of the first because that was when I think the confidence shift came. Mm. Towards the end of the first.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it was a good fight. I still think Arnold, like you said, I think he's the better fighter technically out of the two of them. Mm-hmm. But I think once momentum gets on Gene Silva's side, it's difficult to slow him down. And I don't know as...
And I think as well because he's knocked out so many people and he has his aura of being such a powerful puncher, then you automatically expect to hit his punches being all powerful.
What were the stats? I mean, he did outstrike Arnold according to... So I've got UFC stats here in front of me. Yeah, I mean, significant strikes. He outlanded Arnold Allen. Arnold outlanded him in the first round, but then the second and third were Gene Silva, as well as takedown attempts. One takedown in the second round and 3 of 5 attempts in the third round. So, I mean, it's clear in the stat. He just did a good job of recovering after Arnold started well, you know, and fair play to him. I mean, it was a solid performance. I feel like there's something that Arnold needs that he's missing, and I'm not quite sure what it is. I don't necessarily think it's the nickname, although it might make a difference. Do you know what I mean? He just kind of needs... Oh, man, and I've got to mention it. And I've seen a few people in the comments as well. DC was like, oh, he's not Canadian. oh, he's not Canadian. Like, no, that's why he's on... every UFC London card and why he's got an English accent and has the England flag.
Can you even look at the topology?
It's mad, isn't it?
Like...
It's like, it just blew my mind. That I thought he was Canadian.
And he's brilliant. Had what, like 13 fights, 14 fights in the UFC already?
Oh, like at least, yeah. At least.
It's not like he was new.
No. Oh, it's just a gem.
O'Malley did good too.
Hang on, you're jumping about here. Where are you going? Are we going through the order?
Well, this podcast can't be five hours long. Okay, all right, okay.
All right, we'll just leap over the next two. Were you surprised about the Silver?
Rose, yeah, fight? I thought Rose won. Like when we were watching it, I was like, 2-1 Rose, and I left like to make coffee. Just I was so sure
that
was the case. It wasn't even a question. And then you came out and was like, oh, no, it went the other way. And I was confused.
Yeah. Rose landed 5 strikes in the second round.
Yeah, I didn't think she won the second round, but I thought...
I think Natalia Silva's work rate is just so... Like, she's moving and throwing constantly. She looks busy, doesn't she? You know what I mean? But, that was an odd one. But, you know, Natalia Silva's...
Yeah, I still think...
You still thought Rose won it?
Yeah.
What you give her? Which rounds?
I don't remember right now which of the... But I remember it like being 2.
Yeah, I remember you leaving and going to make a drink.
Yeah. I think it was the first 2, actually. Was it the first 2 or the first one?
Yeah, I think it was the first 2 because she kind of picked up.
Yeah, she came out strong on the third, but I just thought... Yeah, and then Rose was kind of like, well, I just need to play this round out. You could even tell when she was speaking to Pat that she was quite... confident that she had won the fight.
Yeah.
2-1, like.
Yeah. Huh. And I've got to ask you what you thought about Waldo Cortez Acosta's incredible guard passing at the end of the Derek Lewis fight.
I don't even know why I train so much. That's how you pass guard. All the training I do, and you just had to step to the side. Oh, waste of time.
It was amazing. It was almost like Derek was expecting him to stop and let him get back up. It was like, he just walked around his legs. And then it was like, oh, Oh, okay. This is the end of the fight, is it? It was so weird.
Yeah. That was weird.
It's like he's lethal until he's on his back, and then he's... Especially if he's given up. Especially if
I've seen Derek Lewis get up from somebody in like full mouth.
Just decide to get up.
He doesn't care.
That just shows you whether he's in the fight or not. And he just had enough by that point. He couldn't hit him though, could he? That's the thing.
I think he was just like frustrated. He just like didn't.
Sick of swinging and missing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Go on.
O'Malley looked good.
Looked great.
I think he like towards the end he was started to feel himself, and we started to see like more what O'Malley's really capable of. He did like a great fight the entire time, but it was cool to see him build into the fight and back into the confidence that
that last round in particular, he was just cruising, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Umar looked good too.
We didn't really talk too much about that fight on the card, but
yeah. I didn't feel like Figueiredo was giving Umar much, cuz he wasn't really engaging.
No.
During the fight, like he just fought to a point where, because the person's not engaging, you have to do a lot more to open yourself up than you would normally in a fight, and it was just
you can't bully in this weight class, can he? That's the thing. You can't bully in this weight class, and he was, you know,
and there was a weight miss.
Yeah. I will just give a quick shout out to the first two fights of the night, because they were two of the best performances in my mind. Ty Miller, his hands looked really good against Fugit. He started to look a bit like Cowboy as that fight went on as well, like in his face as well and everything. Anyway, Ty Miller looked really good. Golden Gloves boxing champ or something, just looked really, really slick with his hands. And then Josh Hockett, I'm not mad into the whole performance that he gives, but that style of wrestling, that attack that he was using against Freeman was just slick. It was really, really fun to watch. And I like the fact that he's so focused on finishing. Like, if you think with him and Waldo and, you know, a couple of these other younger heavyweights coming through, even Taliesin, who's on this card, I know he's got a tough fight with...
Oh, he called out...
Oh no, you're gonna butcher someone's name.
I'm gonna butcher it. So before I do, because it's not, I know for a fact it's not that. What's the guy's name? The first fight.
First fight on what?
On the card that you were just talking about, the heavyweight.
Hockett.
Yeah, Hockett. Okay.
What were you going to say?
Nothing. Nothing. Okay, so...
Bit of a cross between Fugit and Hockett.
Okay, listen. It's a little bit like Anthony Hernandez style of grappling.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like...
Constant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a constant, but not like a super tight on top of you. Just constantly working, constantly moving.
Yeah, and not being too precious about any of the positions either.
So it was good.
Right, let's talk about the main event, and then we'll get on to UFC 325. It feels so weird having two shows like so close together. Look at us for consistency.
Some of you didn't think we were going to come back to the next one.
Correct.
And here we are.
I did not think we'd make it, but here we are.
He's been taking Zaply.
That's it. I'm zapped. All zapped up. I got my mini Von Jasky flying through the air. I've actually got two of these, to be honest. That's how much I like this action figure. I've got the full set over there. Mm. Poor Ray Sefo. All of these guys I think there's like eight of them in the set. All of them are in a fight position, apart from Ray Sefo. Just literally, he's right behind you, just passing to me. Poor Ray Sefo. He's standing with his hands down and his chin out. Who decided that as an action figure for Ray? That's not nice. Like, come on. Like, at least put his hands up or something. He was known for being able to take a thunderous punch. What I will say as well, just giving a shout out to Ray Sefo, I've been watching him sparring while we've been at Extreme Couture. I don't know. I mean, he's ageless. I think he's probably been a vampire since he was like late 40s. That's the age that he's kind of frozen at.
Mm.
I think that's probably when he was turned.
Mm.
So he's been a vampire. So he's probably forever 48. That'd be the shop he'd shop at if he was in the US, forever 48. but he just moves like a cat. He's like, yeah. He's like 250 pounds and he just like stands there with these young fighters and they come in swinging and he's just like, and nothing seems to hit him. And then he just goes, as they're moving away, he just goes, poof. It's wild to watch. It's amazing.
Yeah,
being added to the podcast desk. It's amazing what Fight IQ can do for reactions.
Of the training sessions, I was working on a move that was in a bit of a shorter range, and he just walks by the cage and he goes, oh, follow up with this because the person's going to be doing this usually, and then this is where you cut them off and hit them. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's amazing being
there. Worked like a charm. It was really cool.
Well, like you think about like all the people that are walking around Extreme Couture, obviously all the coaches, you know, Nick Sick and Dennis Davis, and then you've got Randy walking through the gym and Cepho, and then all of the other like legends that are there from like my day of training, like Jay Heron and Mike Pyle walking through, and you know, just seeing so many people. And like, you just imagine if like you could take that information that Ray Cepho's got in his mind and you could just put it all into a book. Like, even he wouldn't be able to do it. There's too much information there. Like, there's so much knowledge walking around in those people. Like, you just want to sit and talk to them all day and see what you can get. There's always something. Even the sumo we've been watching this week. There's so much good information, good knowledge in the sumo to be gleaned.
Listen, we gotta get into this podcast.
Well, talk to me about Paddy then. Go on. Give me a summarized version of your main event.
I thought he was gonna start round one like he did round three.
Yeah,
I thought that was more the start we were gonna get from Paddy.
Yeah,
he was a bit cautious, but he was really pressured. I think that must have been very nervous. You know, that walkout was insane.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was like, and then him in the middle of the ring. Amazing. Gaethje, you did an amazing job in the fight, but the walkout was terrible.
It was so bad.
I was so hyped up for the fight, and then that walkout happened, and
you know, there's one other walkout that I remember that was like that, and I was there live, and it was Chris Lieben versus Akiyama, right? And Chris Lieben comes out to Red Hot Chili Peppers, and he's got bright red hair, and he's bouncing to the cage. And then Akiyama comes in, and he kneels down in the gateway, and his corner team kneel down, and they're holding hands. And it's like Andre Bocelli starts playing or something, and he's crying. And it's like this, it's like the whole arena's like, yeah, Chris Lieben, someone's going to get starched. And then there's this guy who's like, basically looks like he's about to be executed.
Maybe that was part of the tactic.
Like,
Paddy was so hyped, and then that music came in, and then everybody just got a bit like down.
Yeah, it was a bit rough. It was rough. You know,
I mean, amazing fight, but flag, and
he looked so.
There's like a certain beats like per minute you have to hit if you're walking out to a fight. People are paying like $10.
Paddy's was great. For it was such a good beer. Walkout. Did you watch the walkout? Did you see the walkout, Jamie?
Yeah,
it was so good. And even that, you said it as well as we were watching it. Like, as soon as he climbed up the steps to the cage door, like the music shifted, and he was doing the arms again. You were like, man, that was the heads perfectly will roll. Timed. Yeah, that was it.
They did it to the cameras so though. So anyway, I think like that. Imagine so experience that like as a. As a person experiencing like where your adrenaline would do all of this. And even though Paddy's been great in the limelight, that's a lot. Yeah, it was a lot, man.
Especially because he had a while to kind of stand there and wait for Gaethje to get into the cage. And
it
like,
felt even longer with the music.
And Gaethje's walking out. He's got his hat pulled down. Like Tito used to have his hat pulled right down like that. But then he'd like be super hyped up and he'd be bouncing in with his flags and stuff, whereas Gaethje was like, nah, nah, and I'm like, oh no. I think I said to you, if the song's ever been used at someone's funeral, you shouldn't walk out to it. It was just that, I don't know how you go through that kind of walkout and then put on the kind of performance that Gaethje did. Like, maybe it was tactical.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe it was tactical, like, but I don't know.
You got a little bit of an adrenaline dump from them, from going like super, you know.
Can you imagine if they'd have done that in, what was it, UFC Manchester at like 5 o'clock in the morning? Like, everyone would have been bouncing for Paddy's walkout, and then by the time Gaethje got in there, they'd be like... Yeah, man. What an entertainer, though, Paddy. What a tough dude. And the thing... What I loved as well as about his post-fight interview, what he said was bang on. I know I'm tough. I don't need to prove it to anybody. I think this is going to spur him on. Like, there was... Look, I love Paddy. I love his energy and his momentum and everything. There's definite gaps in his game that need fixing, right? There's definite things, certainly within his striking defense. When he's under pressure, he does things more out of instinct than out of good training habits. And that might be because he's never on the back foot in the gym. Like, he's the hammer in every one of his sparring sessions. I don't know whether that's the circumstance, but you can see when he kind of gets backed up against the fence, he starts to bring his lead foot up and kick away. And it's when he's most... I'll be honest, I think his erratic movement is actually what saved him from getting some of those big shots, because he was moving more than Gaethje was anticipating. So Gaethje was missing with a lot of those big shots. But... Like fair play to him, he rallied. And the other thing I will say as well, and like this is a constant criticism of mine, fighters has not been able to make a fist. Like I mean, I know Paddy's got some weird punches. There was that right hand that he looked like he was doing a terrible job of throwing a ball at someone. But Gaethje always sticks his thumbs out. Like, you can watch him when he's in the gym training with his MMA sparring gloves on. Like, one of the first things I learned when I started martial arts was how to make a fist. Your thumb goes underneath your knuckles like that. And when you watch that punch that Gaethje threw, I don't think for one second he had any intention of catching his thumb on Paddy's eye. I just think he's just got bad form on his fist. And I think as he threw it, he was slightly off target and it just pulled his thumb out.
Yeah.
And what we noticed on the face-off as well is that that's an old scar on Paddy, isn't it? I can't remember. It must be one of his Cage Warriors fights. But it was just like, as Gaethje threw the punch, because his thumb was sticking out. And in fact, I need to have a look at Trevor Whitman's gloves and see if he's fixed the thumb on them. Because most boxing gloves, that's my issue, isn't it? Like Clito Reyes, I love the look of them, but they pull your thumbs out like that. And it's really bad for MMA fighters. You've got to learn how to make a fist. You've got to get your thumbs underneath your knuckles. That's my little rant. Got to have one a podcast, right? It's because my coffee's got me charged up. Got me zapped up. Okay.
Yeah, but overall, great fight. I don't want
me
to say
fight.
That the walkout was bad, have anything to do with how I thought the fight was. I'm just saying, you know, okay, for the future.
I've got one question for you then before we wrap this up. Because obviously Gaethje is now interim champ.
Yeah.
Who's the best lightweight in the world? Because it could be a few people. Like, does Gaethje beat Sarukyan? Topuria? We need a poll in the comments.
Yeah, Sarukyan really high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like a fight he beats both with of those. He was there, wasn't he, in the crowd?
He was there, yeah. He's been doing like a whole media tour where he's just like, I'm rich and you're a dweeb.
You've seen all the pizzas on Ariel's podcast. Yeah. I feel like Sarukyan beats both of them right now.
Oh, he did like a little video. You know, John Silva was crying with the belt. Uh-huh. He did one when he was like with Nina and he was crying, but with his jet.
Yeah. So weird that video was.
Lesson. Okay, let's actually get into the podcast, because this might be two podcasts. This is how consistent we are. Two podcasts in one.
Okay. It's a good card, this. This is just scraps, right? We're only doing the main card again. We're going to talk about the top five fights. This, for me, is just a card of scraps. Every single one of these is a good fight, is a good scrap. it's going to be a little bit messy at times. It's going to be a bit tangly and a bit weird. I'm expecting a really, really fun card. to be honest, almost all the Australia cards, they are just like they're mad, aren't they? And I think the way this is matched in particular, it's a very, very a nicely matched card. Are we starting with Quillen?
Yes.
Okay. So the first one is the lightweight bout, all Australia bout. Quillen Salkid against Jamie Malarkey. I went through today and like I've watched Quillen's fights as they've been on, and there's been certain things that have stood out to me. I like his ability, his speed at which he can throw his body kicks out there, and he's got a really nice lead hook to the body as well. I went back to his first pro fight because he's not had many fights as he 11. So this is so Quillen Salkid is at Salkild. I knew I was going to make a mess of the name. Quillen Salkild's 10-1, but lost his first fight, his first pro debut. He's been on a win streak since then. Malarkey is obviously 18-8. He's been around for a while. Malarkey's coming off a win, but he had a couple of losses before that. Quillen just looks really, really solid. But that pro debut, he was against this guy. And the guy's never not fought since. I can't remember what his name was, Pedro or something. And it was just like a mad, tangly grappling exchange. And he just spent too much time in a range that he really didn't need to spend and ended up getting subbed. And you could just, because he had a pretty good amateur career up to that point. Like, he was like 8-3 or something like that. And I think everyone, when he made his pro debut, they were expecting him just to be unbeaten in 10 fights and get signed to the UFC. And at the end of that fight, you can just see he's just broken, just devastated. But he was so much better in his next fight. And then again, and then again. And every time out, you can see a massive leap forward in his game. What I will say, though, is he can get quite reckless in reaching for takedowns. Now, I think he's got all the skills in the world to beat Jamie Malarkey. But I do feel like he can be, especially with the atmosphere in there, it's going to be mad. I can imagine him just working too hard in the first round and Jamie Malarkey just kind of hanging in there and being the tough veteran and then kind of working his way back into the fight.
Yeah. I will say the 2% on Tapology is a bit disrespectful for Malarkey.
Really? Is it on 98%?
Yeah,
really?
It was 99 yesterday, but...
Wow.
I mean...
That's crazy. I mean, like, the thing
Malarkey's
is, obviously...
Malarkey's good.
Yeah, for sure. Like, the momentum's on Quillen's side. But, like, this stood out to me. Because when I first saw it on UFC stats, I thought, hang on a minute, that can't be correct. Average takedown per 15 minutes, 7.77. That's massive. That's a big number for takedown attempts. And I'm thinking to myself, hang on a minute, this guy's had, what, four fights in the UFC, right? Yeah. Including the Contender Series one. Two of them were finishers, so no takedown attempts were made. The other fights that he's had, 49 takedown attempts. That's a wild output. And again, it goes back, like, he might be really successful. He might be able to get in on Malarkey's legs, take him down, gas him out, forcing him to defend. It might work out for him, or he might, because, like, 34% takedown accuracy is not wonderful. Like, if Malarkey's smart, I'm like, okay, first round, come and do your best.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to slow you down and fire blanket everything that you do and make you carry my weight.
Like, it was a bit weird because, like, versus Nasprat, you know what I'm talking about. He's just Nasprat, always. It's just,
yeah.
It's a good nickname for him. He was shooting from so far away.
Yeah, he was.
Even
on
DC
knees.
Was like, oh.
Yeah.
You know?
Was on his knees loud. Shooting.
Yeah,
him.
Like,
yeah.
But he wasn't, in his other fights, like versus Young in his Contender Series fight, and versus Ashmoosh.
Jubilee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
Ashmoosh.
Ashmoosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Close enough.
Yeah.
Our research, like 300 fights. You think I'm going to remember? Nobody remembers my name. So,
Vanessa, right?
So the amount of people that keep calling me Vanessa is ridiculous. is it a joke at this point? Okay.
It is pretty funny.
Yeah, he was shooting from like a normal distance and his wrestling was good. I don't know if it's because Nasprat's like ability that he felt, oh, this is a higher, and there was a bit more panic and he shot from further away.
Yeah.
But versus the other guys, he wasn't shooting like that far.
Yeah.
But the range started a lot
He does wider. That. Like if you go back and watch some of his earlier fights on Eternal, because he's had his whole career on Eternal, Eternal MMA since, you know, since his pro debut.
Mm.
And they're all on Fight Pass. Pablo, that was the first guy that fought him, who's never fought since. He won that one fight,
never fought since.
Like, there's a couple of fights that he had. Brett Pastore was one, I think that was his first title defense on Eternal. They'd brought over this American dude, and like there was some exchanges in that where he was like really lunging in for takedowns, if I remember correctly. He can get a little bit reckless and a bit reachy, and like I think Malarkey's faster in and out. I think Quillen might be faster off the mark in, but then he stays in and he tends to get hit at that point. I mean, I think Quillen's probably going to win. I think he's got momentum and youth on his side. I don't know whether him walking out in... It's Sydney, right?
Yeah.
I don't know whether him walking out in Sydney knowing that he's fighting someone that's been on all of the UFC cards that he's been to watch... You know what I mean? Like, he was at the all three of them, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, I don't know whether in his head, he might have built Malarkey up a little bit, you know? Like, I'm just thinking about it, like, as a domestic fight. I was trying to think, what kind of fight could you make on UFC London that would be like this fight, but for the UK? Does that make sense? You understand what I'm saying? Because, like, you got Malarkey, who's, what, 18-8, who's had 400 fights in the UFC. And then you got this kid who's been to the UFC, started training because of the UFC in Australia, and then is now fighting someone that has kind of...
Yeah, you been there what I'm for saying? Such a long yeah. time.
It's yeah. I couldn't think of two UK fighters that are...
Maybe Nathaniel Wood, Leroy.
Yeah, I thought that. But, yeah, but they're still... It's quite equal in their,
yeah, they're not,
in their progress.
Not
you know what I mean? Whereas Malarkey, it feels very much like, I don't know. I mean, even that last fight that Malarkey had, we just watched it again, didn't we? Or you maybe watched the end of it with me against Bedoya. Like if Bedoya had got started earlier, I think he'd have probably been able to stop him in the third round.
Yeah, it was quite a confidence battle, that fight, because Bedoya was coming in on a 3-fight losing streak. Not one in the UFC before, so you're just like, oh, am I good enough for this level and stuff? And Malarkey was coming off 2 first-round knockouts. So you get knockout like, oh, losses, am I going to get knocked out again? So they were both battling their own thing within the fight.
It was a great fight, though, still. Yeah. But like that third round was where you could like see Malarkey starting to struggle. Yeah.
I mean, he does throw good calf kicks, good cross-to-head kicks, tie clinch and ease. We saw him get to the back and control Bedoya really well.
What's your prediction?
I think Quillen.
Yeah. Stops him or decision?
Maybe stops him.
Mm. He's got some good subs on his record. A lot of rear naked chokes, but he is attacking with other stuff.
I think it's his striking that's going to do
that high elbow guillotine.
Just because he has a lot of power.
But this is where I think he could probably knock Malarkey down. But I don't know whether his instinct will be to keep hitting him or to jump on a submission.
Mm.
He is a bit of a submission spam machine when he feels like the opportunity's there. So he might not necessarily go for more strikes. There was when his first pro debut was a really nice high elbow guillotine. And I could see him hitting something like that. You know what I mean? Especially after he's hit Malarkey and hurt him. I think he's going to sub him probably second round. Okay, next fight. What was your pick? You said Quillen, but by how?
Second round TKO.
TKO, okay. Okay, heavyweights. Tai Tuivasa, bless him, we love him, on a five fight losing streak. I almost know how you feel. I got four losses in, but five is rough. And the thing is as well, it's like you know, you always know what you're going to get with Tai. Yeah. He's got great striking. He's got a good fight IQ. He's slightly undersized in height and reach for the weight class. He's not quite as quick as some of the guys in the weight class. If he connects, he's going to knock you out. But he's got all of the physical disadvantages in this fight. And I would say that the power is probably fairly equal between the two. A five-fight losing streak, though, is rough. And the other thing as well is I was looking down Ty's record just to kind of wonder how he does in Australia. And he doesn't do well, bless him. So Rosenstrike, that was Perth, lost that fight. Lost in Vegas, lost in Sydney against Volkov.
I think he was just ranked so high and it was like so close. And then it got further and further. And then also like the motivation got further and further.
Like he was like his first loss on his record was to Judia Dos Santos in Adelaide. Then he lost to Blagoy and then he lost to Spivak in Melbourne. And then he had a five-fight win streak. Didn't fight in Australia. Beat Derek Lewis in Houston. Because Derek Lewis kind of struggles with the same thing.
Yeah, he struggles in
that's
Texas.
That's what got me thinking. When I was watching, I was like, man, Derek Lewis looks really good here. I'm like, this is unusual for him in Texas. And then the next thing, he's like face planting from an elbow. I wonder how Ty manages with that. Because that's, I mean, it's, I think he's what, one and, obviously, you know, if you look at his earlier fight, you take into account his pre-UFC record, then of course that's going to even it out because they were all in Australia. But at this level, and the thing is as well, you kind of know, like, you know how to beat Ty, you know? Yeah. Like he has got decent instincts, but he can get tired and he can quit. And like in that Volkov fight, it almost seemed like Volkov wanted to strike with him, which is why he wasn't trying to take him down. But then when Ty was falling over, he was like, oh, all right, let me just mount Ezekiel choke, you know? I kind of feel like a smart fighter, even someone with the limited experience of Taliesin, can figure out that if I can take him down, I'm most likely going to win the fight.
Yeah, or you can go the Cyril Gane approach and just hit him in the body.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's really when.
Do you think this guy has the movement though? That's my concern. He is a bit flat footed and a bit game to scrap. Like even in his fights before the UFC, and he's not. I mean, what did I say to you earlier? He's had his whole fight career is shorter than Ty's last fight, split decision against Rosenstruck. It's like 13 minutes total. But like most of the time, he was like he's quite measured. He reminded me a little bit of Henan Fajeda. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like he's got quite cautious and patient, but very, very long straight punches, solid kicks to the head and body off his back leg.
Yeah.
But does get clipped.
But you just say kick to the body, and that's how I think he's going to beat Tai Tuivasa. I just think he's going to body kick him.
Yeah.
And he's going to use his jab because he's like 8 feet tall.
He is.
And Tai Tuivasa
is
really short in comparison.
So this is UFC stats, because I have a feeling that on his, when they announce him as 6'8". But 6'7" compared to 6'2", so he's got a 5-inch height advantage and 83 inches compared to 75, so he's got an 8-inch reach advantage as well. 8-1 versus 15-8. Average fight time is 1 minute and 2 seconds.
Jeez.
Yeah. But, like, you know, I mean,
I know he lost his, like, last fight versus Derek Lewis. And
was he overconfident, though? He looked a little bit
overconfident. I think so. And I think that was, like, a good learning curve because, you know, you see Derek Lewis and you're like, oh, yeah, easy. You know, especially with Waldo just walked around his guard.
Yeah, didn't something happen? Didn't he get jabbed in the eye and Derek Lewis was like kind of, and he started to look like he was going to give up. And then Taliesin.
There's like a moment where he looks like he's
deadly or nothing.
He's not interested.
There's no middle ground.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that was a good learning curve for him. I don't think he's had the learning curve of fighting a full three round fight.
He's not fought a full round. That's wild.
So I think like when that happens, there's going to be parts because, you see it with a lot of people that have really fast finishes and stuff. When they get into the third round for the first time, it's almost like a shock to how tired they are or a shock to how they feel. And with that comes a little bit of panic. So whenever that does happen, I feel like that's going to be helpful for his career as well. But I think with Ty, he's probably going to stop Ty to the body. I think he's a good fighter. I just don't feel like his motivation has been shown so much, you know. I think he has a lot of skill. He has good instinct. He has good chin. What?
I'm just reassuring the fans that you're wrong. It's okay. It's okay. She's wrong. Literally, she's fine.
Literally said Athlete Factory the whole ass podcast when it was Vortex.
You didn't correct me.
Well, I did say the Vortex Cafe. I know.
I didn't even have that reply ready, but I was, bam, I was there. I was there. That was slip counter of the day.
Oh, the day?
Okay, look.
It's like a billion per hour.
Everyone loves Ty. No one wants to hear that Ty is going to have another loss on his record, because that would be six. And the UFC are almost definitely not going to keep a hold of him. Right?
Yeah, but he's got a lot of side businesses, so let's not feel too bad.
I know, but I don't want to watch his side businesses. I want to watch him fight.
Yeah, well, maybe he doesn't feel like fighting anymore.
I think he does. But I think he does. That's the thing, is I think he does. And I actually think he looked in, like, especially in the Volkov fight, I actually think he looked in good shape. Like, for Ty, I know he's
I think he looked in really good shape versus Gone. Because I was doing the, what do you call it? Just some interview stuff over in that event. And I saw Ty, and he looked a lot more, like, focused than I had seen him before. Mm. And I think that loss was quite disappointing, and then things kind of went downhill. And then as they were going downhill, I think a little bit of the motivation was lost.
Mm.
Because when you're a heavyweight, you can just go...
Yeah.
just bam, bang.
Okay,
then.
So if I'm making an... Because I'm going to pick Ty, just purely because it's fun to make an argument for the one that's going to be a massive underdog. And, you know, he's a big underdog, and he's fighting...
Can't be as big as Malarkey, man. That's...
Why is he? Is he a massive underdog? Or aside from Tapology. So what does this say? How have they got... what's the...
They have 83% Teixeira.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not as bad. 14% can see the Hail Mary knockout. But I keep going back to Ty's fight against Stefan Struve. You were there for that one, yeah? It was Fight Island.
Yeah.
Because he was like... And it's the same thing with Roy Nelson back in the day as well. Like, get a tall fighter, backed up against the fence, get them to stand tall, and then punch their head over the fence. Like, Ty was really good at that. He was always good at pressuring. And then with the Volkov fight, I mean, I think Volkov's an elite heavyweight, and I don't think Ty was going to beat him in any range. But because Volkov was playing into Ty's hands a little bit because he wanted to strike, I actually thought Ty did some really good stuff. Like his calf attack was good.
Mm.
Like, and if he was doing that against Volkov, to do that against Teixeira, I don't think is out of the question. I think one thing you can guarantee about Ty, which is, I don't think it's ever going to change, is that you could hit him with a cricket bat. Like, he takes a really, really good shot. I know he gets knocked out, of course, but it's an accumulation of good, solid punches that usually does it, right? Like Gan was wailing on him, right?
Yeah, but he had already hit him in the body.
But yeah, of course. But at the same time, I think that this guy might be a little bit overeager because he's coming off a loss, right? He's either going to be overeager or hesitating. And both work against him. Right, he's still young in his career, and I feel like if Ty starts to walk him down, and Teixeira throws a few shots and they kind of bounce off Ty a little bit, things might start to unravel. And he's literally never been out the first round. If Ty walks him down for 5 minutes and kicks him in the calf a few times, that second round is a different fight entirely.
Oh, one thing I would say, because we did the podcast when he fought Taffa, and I remember picking Taffa because I thought that he just had a little bit more experience
yeah.
and all of this. But that elbow, that like destroyed his nose. I don't know why they were saying, oh, he just curled up in a ball. You saw when it hit, the nose went like it changed shape
yeah.
on his face visibly. You could not not see that. He didn't just curl up in a ball. He got Mike Perry.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, yeah. Was that Uruguay?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was on the flight back with him. Man, he had like a whole thing on his face. The worst still is Anderson Silva, Rich Franklin, though. That was like Rich Franklin went from having a straight nose to having a capital letter C. It was literally, you could see the point of Anderson Silva's nose and where it just moved his nose to the side, smelling round yeah. corners. Wasn't that, yeah,
there's not like much to see on this guy, but I think what I've seen
What's his nickname mean? Do you know?
What is
Xiao? Xicao.
I don't know, I'll just look it up.
Taliesin Teixeira. Teixeira. Say it.
Teixeira.
Teixeira. Can't do it. Glover Teixeira.
I don't know what that means. We need to move on.
Go on then. Go on then. Move us on.
Okay.
You intro the next fight.
All right. You pick Tito Vasa via what?
I think he's going to knock him out.
Okay. I think
late second round. Tito Vasa, late second round knockout. Come on, Ty.
All right.
Get your Fiziev shoe ready.
Fiziev versus Rufy.
Ooh.
Bam, bam, bam.
Bam, bam, bam.
All right.
Okay. Quick match preview. So 13-4 for Fiziev, 12-2 for Rufy. 5'8 for Fiziev, so 3 inches height advantage for Rufy and a 4-inch reach advantage for Rufy as well. Go on then.
Fiziev is a scary individual.
He is.
I saw him in Las Vegas. He was at the PI, right?
It's a good thing he's only 5'8 and be king of the world.
I remember, like, you know, we were all getting treatments and stuff, and one of the guys that was giving him a treatment said some joke. He didn't even move his face. And then I was like, bro, if he attacks you, I don't know. I can't, you Quite know.
Not even getting involved.
I don't know what you think I can do.
Yeah.
But you better not joke anymore.
Can he beat Rufy?
Yeah.
Oh, that was... All right. I thought you were going to kind
yeah,
of
I'm
make
like
a...
Team Fiziev all the way.
Really? Okay. Why is that then? Why do you think Rufy can't beat him?
I don't think Rufy can't beat him. I just think Fiziev is going to win.
Mm. Why though? Why? Where is Fiziev better?
I think Fiziev is doing a great job at incorporating takedowns.
Where are the rankings?
I think he has a lot of high-level striking in a short range.
Yeah, he does.
You know, in the gyms that he trains at and like the Muay Thai level that he has is really good. I think Rufy has incredible skills and incredible body abilities to do things acrobatically. We see him go to the calf kick or like do look away stuff. But I think Fiziev has a better understanding of the techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rufy is able to do those things more and more as he gains confidence during the fight and as the other people feel a little bit like outmatched. I mean, when you have somebody feeling like that, you could really do anything.
Do you think Fiziev's gonna use his wrestling then? I was impressed with his wrestling against Gaethje, but not really because it opened up, not really because it created any opportunities for him aside from to strike out of. I don't know, like, can you see him?
Yeah, but after what Benoit Saint-Denis did yeah. to Rufy, like...
Do you think Fiziev can do that to him, though? I'm not sure if he can.
I think he has enough striking to...
Like, I know that was a really solid performance from Saint-Denis, but I really felt like Rufy just didn't get started in that fight. He just didn't look himself.
No, he didn't.
I mean, the crowd was ridiculous. It was... Like that. That's... The volume in there itself, he just looked shocked. And that's where Saint-Denis just thrives in that kind of circumstance. I don't think that was a good example of what he's capable of. Like, I think, you know, when you watch him, like when he fought Green and when he fought Malarkey, like his ability is just measured and he's controlled, and he didn't look like he could even get into the fight with Saint-Denis. He was under pressure. He was dealing with stuff as well as the crowd, overwhelmed. I don't know. I think he's got really sick style.
But sometimes maybe it's the nickname One Shot because the counters are so clean that he almost like does it and like looks at it like
yeah
nice. And in those situations Fazeev does like 3 or 4, so I think maybe within Rufy might land one and then Fazeev have more output,
right? So he's I get what you're saying. So you're picking Fazeev what, to stop him or what? Decision?
No, decision.
Okay.
Yeah, his switch lead body kicks are insane.
Yeah.
The way that he hits to the body. I think when he fought Gamrot and he hurt his leg, there was a little bit, you know, and then to come back and face the guy that you lost to after such an injury and it being Gaethje and Gaethje just winning the interim belt, you know, and that uppercut Gaethje hit him with was ridiculous. Yeah, that was amazing. So he's able to take a solid shot, is what I'm trying to say, and continue into the fight and fight his way and have a lot of output. Not that I think Rufy, when he fought at MSG, was James. Like, he hit him a lot of times. You know, it's not like he can't have that much output, but the level difference in ability of Fazeev and the other guys in striking is quite high.
I was looking at the rankings. I don't think they've been updated from the weekend because...
Oh, like...
Yeah, I don't know if they've been updated, but it's got...
I don't remember if it was Moicano or the Dos Anjos knockout. Either one of those. They were disgusting.
It's a good thing you don't remember. Okay, Fazeev, you're taking Fazeev by decision.
Yes, decision.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards Rufy just as an upset. I feel like he might land something a bit mad and... I don't know. Like, I like Fazeev a lot, but I feel at some point, I don't know. I mean, is he good enough to get to the belt, Fazeev, do you think? Like, I'm looking at the people above him, and I feel like Rufy could get to the belt. I feel like he's got the skills to be able to work his way through these fighters, whereas Fazeev, I feel like I've seen the best of him now. And the best of him is very, very good. I don't feel like I'm going to see much more from him, though. You know what I mean?
I feel there's sometimes some fighters that, in that example that you're giving, that can get to the belt, but then face this one type of fighter that is sort of their kryptonite, but they can beat everyone else to the belt, so as long as they don't face that type. Saying this is the example. I'm just saying.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, I think if there is a kryptonite, I think it's Benoit Saint-Denis for Rufy. Like, I think maybe the technical ability of Fazeev is going to give Rufy time to be in the fight, whereas Saint-Denis just didn't let him get started. And that with the crowd on top of it, I don't know.
Okay, so I'm going Fazeev and you're going...
Yeah, I'm kind of right on the fence about it, but I'll go with...
This is a Pigs podcast, you know.
I'll go with Rufy. I don't think he's going to be able to stop Fazeev. But I'll pick Rufy by decision.
Okay. Come on, Fazeev.
Just for something a bit different. This co-main event's carnage. Dan Hooker versus Benoit Saint-Denis. 24-13 for Dan Hooker, 16-3 for Saint-Denis. Both of these guys ranked as well. These rankings have got to be out of date, though, I think, because they would have moved around a little bit. Dan Hooker at number 6 and Saint-Denis at number 8 on these rankings currently. Oh, man. So I have a thought on this one. Because I feel like Dan Hooker is one of my favorite fighters to watch. One of my favorite fights to call was him against Paul Felder. It was amazing. I feel like he's kind of, like, he's identified who he is. and he's identified the level at which he is going to fight at. And the most important thing is fighting, right?
Hmm.
Like, winning's really, really nice, but the most important thing's fighting. And I feel like he's kind of positioned himself in this spot in the division as like, I'm going to filter. And I don't know whether, like, obviously it's not a decision. Of course, he would love to get to the belt, but I feel like he's more comfortable in that position because he's been there a bit longer. And I feel like Saint-Denis's got the potential to become that same archetype of fighter where they don't get any further because they don't evolve their fight IQ. They choose not to. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, Dan Hooker at times could have made better decisions, but he didn't because he's like, no, let's go, let's throw down. And the fans love him for it.
Isn't that like sort of what happened with Diego Sanchez though?
Yeah, but like Diego Sanchez in a way more extreme way as well. Like, Diego went like fully reckless. Like, yeah. It was weird because Diego was a really strong grappler, like early on the Ultimate Fighter and before the UFC. And it was like, there was one particular, I think it was the Clay Guida fight where it was at the Palms and it was just mad. It was a wild back and forth. And like, Guida got hit with a head kick and bounced back up. But like, there were a couple of fights around that time where Diego kind of got known for that. And then it was like, almost like he had to live up to that a little bit. And Dan Hooker's a bit like that. Like, there was, the reason why I'm saying it is because something Saint-Denis was saying in the Countdown show,
mm-hmm.
where he was talking about, he mentioned fight IQ and decision making. I can't remember exactly what the quote was now, but it kind of led me to feel like this is either going to define him as, I'm a Dan Hooker type fighter, or I'm going to evolve my fight IQ and I'm going to be better than Dan Hooker. Like, I feel like this is going to come down to Saint-Denis' willingness to not scrap.
But he didn't scrap against Rufy.
Yeah, I know. But
he like quartered him up like he was a chicken trying to get away.
Yeah.
It's like, started the second round, bam, time to the ground. That's it.
For sure. But at the same, but like, do you think he's going to do that against Dan Hooker? Do you think he's going to be quite as aggressive to close him down and as aggressive to take him down? Like, does the crowd affect him? Because it like.
No, what I'm saying is that showed a good fight IQ and a willingness to do what was necessary to win.
I agree. But what I'm saying to you is do you get that same fight out of Dan Hooker? Like, Arnold Allen almost lost to Dan Hooker in London because he got drawn into a war. And Arnold's not that guy.
Yeah.
It's almost I'm a big fan of Dan Hooker. Like, his tattoos, he looks like he's branded himself like a heavy metal band. Like, he's there for war. Mm. He's got a skull on his chest. He's got axes and shit behind it. It's like, let's go. And like, you're fighting Dan Hooker in Australia. You know what I mean? It's like there's that gremlin inside Benoit Saint-Denis that he was able to keep a hold of when he was in Paris last, but he might not be able to this time around, you know? Like, I just, there are certain fighters that when I fought Chris Lytle, I'm fighting Chris Lytle, let's go, throw down. Like, that was Chris Lytle's style, you know? And I got massively drawn into it because I wanted that fight.
Mm.
And you just don't know whether, like, the rush of fighting Dan Hooker. And remember this as well. Like Benoit Saint-Denis is going to be really well received in Australia. Like, the fans are going to love him. So everyone that's meeting him is like, whoa, you and Dan Hooker, co-main event. It's going to be crazy. He's going to feel a responsibility to deliver to these fans. Like, this is where this is exactly what I'm talking about with that challenge. Like, if he's just all in for war, then he's going to fulfill that Dan Hooker role and be sitting around 6 or 8 in the division forever.
Yeah.
You know, or he's going to go, no, hang on a minute, I'm going to make calculated decisions here. I'm going to draw Dan Hooker into a war. I'm going to take him down. I'm going to take his back. I'm going to sub him. That would be a much smarter way of going about it. This is where
I think after the fight he had against Moicano, it like sunk in that was necessary. Because Moicano planned for that, especially when he put out the clips after that, how he got that takedown. Once he got that takedown, that, like, he just couldn't do anything.
But he didn't learn against Poirier.
Yeah, but Poirier was before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's like, he had that lesson, that opportunity.
Yeah,
to learn
but
that
it, like, Moicano really sunk it in.
I don't know.
So sometimes, you know, it takes you a little bit to like see something. And also against Poirier, he had a staff, so you could be like, oh, it was because I had staff, or like you could have some excuses towards it. But versus Moicano, after Moicano caught the kick, turned around, got that takedown, and then was on top, just like smashed him in front of everybody in Paris. Because that's when he switched and started training with Nicolas Ott.
Yeah.
So he is actively making great choices in order to have the right game plan, the right fight IQ, learn the things that he needs to. Like, I was watching, and this is very sporadic videos. It doesn't mean that's what they're going to put or whatever. But during the countdown, you saw Dan Hooker just sparring with everybody, doing whatever. Everybody was orthodox and stuff. And then you saw Benoit Saint-Denis, and he was working specific southpaw movements, and it was like perfecting them in a way where he's just drilling what he needs to for the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that change, because with the Moicano, it kind of reminds me of what you told me about the knee with like Masvidal. Obviously, it wasn't fight ending, so it wasn't as celebrated, but it was beautifully studied. And after that, I think there's been a giant change. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I watched him versus Rufy first, and I was just like,
who?
Saint-Denis.
Right.
Because Dan Hooker, did he fight Rufy?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just helping out for the people, you know. It's good practice. You're commentating this weekend, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I saw that, and I saw him walk out. I saw the people. And when he won, I just thought, can you imagine to experience that? Like, being from that place, to have all that. I was like, wow. And then I saw versus Moicano, a complete opposite. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the worst ever. So, yeah.
So what's your pick?
I'm a big Saint-Denis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What sub? You think he's gonna sub him? You think he'll get a finish?
Yeah, I think he might sub him.
Mm.
Like, I think like skill wise, for example, I know Armin Sarukian got Dan Hooker down and was able to sub him. Makachev was also able to sub him. I think these fighters are higher than Benoit Saint-Denis.
Yeah.
I think they're a much higher level. Not that Benoit Saint-Denis is not evolving, just currently.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm the sticking point for me a little bit is his fight against Gamrot. You know.
Yeah, that was weird because versus Gamrot, he was using the guillotine to improve position and to get up or reverse it. And then versus Sarukian, he used the guillotine to stay on his back.
Yeah, but you remember that guillotine attempt he had on Sarukian, where Sarukian was forced to bail as quickly as he did. I think most people would have gotten caught in that guillotine. Like, that was a really like last minute panic escape where he spun through in his guard. The thing is,
yeah, but if you're fighting Saruki, you better know that he needs to be asleep if you're going to win. You know, he's not going to just tap to something that 90% of people would tap.
Yeah, for
to.
Sure. But the because, but the fact that he was close with it was, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go the opposite way. I think Dan Hooker could shut him out, and I'm going to be all wrong on my picks again, aren't I, for this? I just should stop letting you pick first. I always ask you what you think and then pick afterwards. Mm. And I'm like, it's no fun to pick the same, is it? No, I'm going to pick Dan Hooker because why not? I think he's going to be super powered by the fans. I could just see Benoit Saint-Denis having a good game plan but getting drawn into a scrap because of the whole vibe around Dan Hooker fight in Australia. And I think he might buy into the energy a little bit and get a bit reckless. I could even see him get tangled
special
up in a
forces,
guillotine.
Super, whatever you think he's going to get drawn in. Mm-mm.
You say that like it's never happened before. It's not that he's known for.
Yeah, but it's not that it's never happened. Is that like
you think he's learned from it?
I think he's learned from it, and I just during the countdown, it felt like Dan Hooker was trying to like edge him on for that. I thought like, I'm just here to hurt you. Like,
yeah, but I think Dan knows who he is. That's the thing. Is I think he's kind of like. You know, he's like, he's running his fight club and he's doing his YouTube with his daughter. And I just think he's kind of found his, like, he knows who he is. He's like, I'm here to entertain the fans with chaos.
And yeah, and Benoit Saint-Denis is like, I want to do whatever I need to fix to get to the belt. It's two different mindsets.
And I think this is, yeah, I agree. But that's my question. I think this is the turning point for him. I think if he can do that against Dan Hooker, then we're going to see Benoit Saint-Denis fight for the belt. And that's where I'm kind of stuck, is I could see him getting drawn into a scrap.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like public weigh-in on the stage. Ah, everybody's crazy drunk. It's like first thing in the morning over there as well.
Than Paris.
Hey, they would. Man, that no, volume-wise.
Crazy.
Volume-wise. But no one in Paris is getting up at 7 a.m. to start drinking and watching fights. That's not happening. The restaurants don't open until 8 p.m. The Australians are savage for this stuff. That energy's different. It's not the same. It's not the same volume and passion potentially, but the want for violence. That's why the card's built as it is.
No, okay. I'm main event.
Okay. First of all, it's weird that they're just running it back now. Like, was the first one close enough to go? Yeah, no, we just need to rematch this.
No, there's not a single person online that hasn't said it's weird.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that that's why I feel like it, like there's so much less to gain from this for Volk, and it's so much more risky. You know, like even like dig a bit deeper into the division, like Ivlev would be just I don't know not a pleasant fight for anybody because you just don't know how good he is. You know what I mean? Yair Rodriguez, he's not been active for a long while, so I don't know what the crack
I'd
is
rather
with him.
Fight Lopez than Ilov. I mean, Ilov beat Lopez. I know that was in his debut and all this, but
like running it back with someone that you just beaten, like, and the thing is, like, Lopez did a few good things in that fight. I'm not saying it wasn't a one sided fight. Like, Volk was cut, and it just seems like a it just there doesn't seem any real value in it. You know these rankings have not been updated. I reckon if you offered the fight to Gene Silver, he'd take it. You know, I just want to see someone different in there with him. Like, even Aljamain Sterling would have been. I don't know. It's just weird for him to be running it back straight away. I like Lopez, and I do feel like he's got a really, really good opportunity because he's like. Could you imagine the feeling that he had walking out of the cage that night? Like. I can imagine that feeling of, man, I could have done more. I could have got to him. I could have done this. I could have fixed this.
Yeah, it was his first main event. I was doing like interviews and stuff, and especially because he's Spanish, so I got to speak to him and see how that whole process was. And there was certainly points where I thought he was quite emotional to be in the spot that he is in because he does have a lot of fights. And, you know, it's kind of come... At the end of it, like, if you've had that many fights and not gotten to the UFC yet, maybe you start to think, oh, this might not happen for me or this. But he's had such a rise and so much love from the fans. Like, you get an overwhelming sense of gratefulness of the difference that has happened. And especially when you're still adjusting. And I felt him that fight week was quite and it's not the same, like, emotional like John Silva where it starts – to be like, it's a bit much now, you know? It was just like genuine. It was his heartfelt love for everybody who supported him and has kept, like, you could feel it all. And the team around him loved him to bits, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's everybody from the camera crew to, you know, his training partners. Everybody had a strong sense of, like, love and care for him. So that, I think, played a big part in him stepping in to fight in Miami. Especially, you know, fighting Volkanovski, his first main event, his first title fight. And yeah, I think emotionally that played a part in the fight. I think Volkanovski showed higher fight IQ, though.
Yeah.
He just showed that his age a little bit. When, you know, he just showed higher fight IQ and a bad habit of going back with his head up high, which is how Topuria got him. And who was the other that got him?
Makhachev. Yeah.
With the kick, you know, like, I just think, like, that is now... And he was coming off two knockouts, so it was also a factor in Volkanovski going into the fight. It was like proving himself that he can fight again and not have this bad knockout thing, especially with his age and all this. But overall, I think Volkanovski showed a higher fight IQ and like a better understanding of jabs and space and movement. And
Can he do it again, though? I just this feels like a bad idea to me. Like, I feel like Lopez beat Silva up like he was annoyed at his performance with Volk. And I feel like he's had enough time to make improvements without overthinking it too much. Right? It's less than a year, isn't it? It was April that he fought him the first time. Like, he's done a camp, he's shown improvements. It was his most aggressive performance in the UFC, I thought. And I think he can switch through gears, and I think if he does, that's where we start to see Volk struggle. And I think there is damage on Volk's face, and I think we will see that damage again. And I do think his age is going to show a little bit. And the thing is as well, like, I think they said it in commentary, didn't they? Like, if he won the fight, he would be the oldest person, you know, below lightweight to have won a title or defended a title or something. Like, it's not about age necessarily.
I think Gaethje just beat him.
But it's not about age necessarily. It's about the amount of damage that you take over the years when you get to that age, right?
He was definitely showing more previous damage during the fight. Like, during the fight, I saw some previous damage come out in some of the shots that he took. And even the cuts, like, you could see his, like, face. There are parts that are just... more tender or more prone to being cut again.
Yeah. Scar tissue. And a 5-round fight makes a big difference if you've got scar tissue, because you get opened up in the first or second round. You have to, you're potentially battling with the doctor to stay in the fight. This just feels awkward to me, this does. I don't know. Like, I'm a big fan of Volk, but this feels like he's given an opportunity for someone to come and have another go at correcting their last performance. Like, I can't think of a single fight where, like, if you'd have asked me, hey, do you want to just run this one back? I'd been like, yeah. Do you not think I could have done better? I absolutely think I could have done better. And I just 100% think Lopez is going to watch that fight and see so many different areas where he can. And is Volk going to be a better version of himself in this fight? I just don't. He's going to probably be as good as he ever.
But I think the way that he fights kind of negates somebody else's game from getting going. It's not that I don't think Lopez has the skill. Like, his grappling's really sick, but Volk does a really good job at freezing people with his movement and his feints, and then he switches things up. So you do spend some time trying to figure him out, and he's already like hitting you quite a bit. And
I don't know. I have a feeling that Lopez is going to catch him with something. I have a feeling that in hindsight, we're all going to look back and go, why would he have taken that fight? You know? I don't know. Like, I think Volk for me is obviously one of the best featherweights ever.
I said he was funny and he liked the comments, so he's definitely winning.
I also don't think he's the kind of fighter that's going to be able to go, you know what? I'm on top here. Here's the belt back. I'm going to walk away. He's just not that guy. You're going to have to force him to retire.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, like, that worries me a little bit for him, because he's not going to be looked after by the UFC. You know, if he loses this one, he's going to be fighting some next up and coming killer. It's not going to be like a...
It was a bit weird in the countdown show. He was training and during the session, he had no knee brace and then he got one on his left leg. But he was wearing the same clothes. So it was the same session. So,
I mean, he's got to be, hasn't he? Like, he's got to be. I mean, I'm only 6 years older than him. He was born in 88.
Are you sure you want to check?
How old am I? Yeah, I mean, and especially in this weight class as well. Everyone's getting bigger. Everyone's hitting harder. You know, I think Lopez's ground game is very, very good. And I think, like for me, when I was talking to Subradio guy about this, I was saying that for me, Volk needs to use his wrestling more, but not necessarily because he's going to have any more success with it, because he didn't have much in the last fight. But I think the ability to confuse at close range is a good way of shutting Lopez down.
Mm.
You know, I think if he's always starting on the outside and moving in, Lopez at some point, probably pretty early on, he's going to start throwing caution to the wind, and he's just going to start throwing. And I think his timing's good. I think he's got a good eye, good read for movement. And I think eventually he's going to be able to catch him with something, and Volk might not be able to take it as well as he used to.
His certainly uppercut his is a good like defense.
Yeah, he's throws taller,
it so
he?
Much. Yeah,
5'11" to 5'6", but there's only an inch difference in reach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the uppercut, it's good because like he'll throw it, he'll land it, or he'll have an underhook.
Mm.
And in a lot of situations, when Volk went for a takedown, the reason he didn't get it was because Diego had the underhook, because he had thrown an uppercut, not because he necessarily defended that takedown.
Mm.
So that reaction got him. But sometimes he throws his punches really, really short. And although Volkanovski's not tall, he has really long.
Yeah, he does have. He has long broad shoulders arms.
Like it's crazy.
Yeah, there's only reach. An inch difference. Lopez does have a reach advantage, but it's minor considering the height difference.
I'm gonna go with Volk.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah.
What decision again?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna make another mad pick. I just think Diego might just do something. He might. I just feel like he's gonna land something that's gonna change the look of this fight. It wouldn't even surprise me if he's able to stop Volk. Like,
yeah, like that wouldn't surprise me, but because of the damage Volk has taken, and then.
But you've got to take that into account. I mean, the fight is happening now, you know? So, like, I understand what you're saying.
I have taken it to account, and I have chosen Volk. All I'm saying is that it's not, like, unfeasible for Diego to knock him out.
No, for sure.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. But I think damage is going to play a part in it. I do. Yeah. I for sure do. I like 5-round fights, Diego starting faster, landing more. I think Volk's going to be scrambling more for takedowns, and I think Diego's going to really turn his grappling on a bit more in this fight.
Yeah. But John Silva started to land some good shots in the second round.
Mm.
Like, I know Diego did a good job at capitalizing on Silva overextending himself in the
Volk's
beginning of the
fight.
Not
putting people away, though, is he? You know what I mean? Like, he's not knocking people out. He's not like it's volume and timing is what gets it done. I don't think he's gonna. I can't imagine he's gonna hit Diego and really hurt him. I can see Diego knocking Volk off his feet, though.
Yeah, but Volk did hurt Diego in the fight too. Like, he stumbled him back.
Yeah. No, for sure. Look, I don't know. I have a feeling that I feel like time catches up with you, and I feel like this is an opportunity that they're opening the door for Lopez to come and have another go. And he's definitely going to do better than he did last time. I just don't see any way around it, because the reasons why he struggled in the last fight is because he didn't open up as much as he could have done. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I do think it's good for him to get in a little bit of a scrap.
Mm.
But like when he's in a scrap and he's not opening up, that's when Volk runs away with it. Whereas, I don't know. I'm going to be sad, to be honest, if Volk loses, because I just feel like this is a miscalculation having this fight again. I wouldn't even mind Volk going, you know what? Hand the belt back. Let these young guys fight for it. Give me a couple of veterans, you know, and go out like that.
Do you think Volk would
no,
ever
this is my
do
concern.
Never?
No, this is my concern. He's like,
he's talking about going up and taking the lightweight belt.
But we've already watched him get knocked out twice, and like that's gonna be the end of his career, isn't it? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
But
it's not gonna be.
Maybe he can go up, get the lightweight belt, and fight Gaethje instead.
Yeah, I think Gaethje would knock him out though.
Well,
I don't think Volk takes, like, not many people take the punches that Paddy could take. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there was even a point where I thought Gaethje had broken his hand. You know, that, remember that first right hand right in the middle of the cage, like the fourth round? And he just, like, they just cracked. And it was like his, it was like that, that head-to-head clash on the sumo today. They just, like, charged into each other head first. Man, but like it, like the sound of it, it was almost like Gaethje had broken his hand. I don't think many people could take that punch. And I don't think, yeah, I don't know. I'm just, I'm
going to go with Volk.
I'm going to be disappointed when Volk retires. And I feel like I'm going to be sad about the circumstances.
Next time
David sees
me, he's going to be like, I'm not even talking to you.
Keep my fingers crossed. Volk, I love you. I love your cooking channel. It's fantastic. I just think this is a bad idea. Diego Lopez is, I think he's very good. And his last performance, I think he fought with an attitude, like he was there to prove a point.
Yeah.
I think he's going to win. I think Lopez is going to win. I don't know as I can say he's gonna stop him. But I think he might. I think he might, you know. I think he might knock him down and jump on him and beat him up on the floor and get a TKO finish.
Mm.
I don't even want to watch this weekend now I've made these picks. I don't. I'm like, oh no, that's not. I'm disappointed in myself.
Yeah, but look, the old
boy's
got it done last week. Maybe the old boy could get it done this week.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay, all right.
Fight IQ. All right.
Let me quick review the picks then. So we both went with Quillen.
Yeah.
Right. He's
Salt Kid.
Selkild. Good fighter. A lot of fun to watch. You think that Taliesin's going to do it?
Yeah.
I'm going with Ty. Shushu Power. You think Fazeev's going to do it?
Yes.
I'm taking Ruffy. I'm already regretting these picks. And do you think Benoit Saint-Denis is going to stick to his game plan and be the technician in there and take Dan Hooker down and sub him?
Yes.
And I think Dan Hooker is going to declare war. And blood is going to rain from the sky.
That would be really bad because Saint-Denis just doesn't get knocked out and he just takes really... He's either good or he just takes like... It, like bad, man.
Maybe it's a bit of wishful thinking on my part there, because can you imagine what this fight could be if something he was just like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
What they should have said to him is just go and have fun in there. Don't worry about the rankings. We're going to freeze the rankings for this fight. Nothing's going to be affected, win or lose. Just go and have a good time. You know? Just go and have a good time. Is it Dan Motherheady that always tells the fighters to have fun?
I think it is.
We need to get Motherheady referee in this one. Okay, and then you're going with Volk to defend his belt.
Yep.
Do you think he's going to fight again after? Do you think we're going to see him against someone like Movsar or?
I think this should be this last fight. You know,
yeah.
He's in Australia.
It feels like it's set up for him to retire. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, Dominic Cruz in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I saw that the weekend. Congratulations. Very deserving. Volk's got to be Hall of Fame soon as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. I think this is probably his last fight. That would make sense to me. Plus, his cooking channel looks amazing.
Yeah,
I think he trains to keep up with his cooking channel because he threw a lot of calories real quick.
He's living life. I like him. But I do really, I am a big fan of Diego Lopez. And that,
yeah, I am.
That last performance was just like, man, he just felt like he broke silver in that fight. And yeah. Stole a bit of his soul, perhaps. Okay. Yeah.
Showed up like in the press conference with his hat on. He was like down.
Yeah. What about the haircut though? I think that would annoy me. I think like all of that hair.
But
was...
it looks very like silky straight.
It does. It's very
so
smooth.
So it doesn't look like it's heavy.
Yeah.
With the movement.
Yeah, but just
because
he has that thing
side.
With his neck, doesn't he? When he starts to sweat, he has the neck tick.
Oh yeah, he always touches. Oh, I really don't like that.
Yeah, but he can't help it, right? But he can help his hair being over his shoulder and stuff, and that would annoy me.
I don't understand
as well.
Why they don't time when he's doing this to hit him in the head. You know?
Same thing with Poirier with his shorts.
Yeah.
Everyone's got something like that, haven't they? Everyone's got something like that. You can punch Ben Henderson in the face when he's switching toothpick sides in his mouth. You'd never
All right,
get to
Jamie's
him.
Gotta go home.
Jamie, you should go home. It's been a long day for him. He's been at work all
these
day.
People need...
Okay,
stuff to do.
Look, we made our picks. We talked about last night's picks. And I've had a lovely coffee with creatine in it. And I'm all fired up now. I might actually get a workout in, to be honest. T1, try Zapply. Go and get some of the stuff off their website. The T1's amazing. 3 pills a day. Take them after your first meal. Fat-soluble vitamins. All the good stuff that you need. Genuinely feel better, sleeping better. And then creatine. Paul Reed at Vortex is constantly saying, especially at my age or whatever that is, brain health, we need to be using creatine more. There's a lot more research coming out about creatine.
Sean Strickland even advocates for it.
Yeah, but you can never trust what Sean Strickland advocates for. One thing you agree with, and the next thing you want to throw your phone at the wall. So we won't go
with
that.
Well, he says for brain health.
Exactly. That's even more concerning. Try Zapply, great stuff, and also Vortex. Go and check them out online. We'll tag them in this so you can follow them from the posts. Awesome stuff. If you're in the area, Cheshire kind of area, meal prep as well, check out the Vortex Cafe. Amazing food. And yeah, awesome. Thanks for joining us. It's been fun. Enjoy these fights. We've got a little break till the next one, haven't we? The next one.
Yeah, I think it's March 7th.
Oh, the next pay-per-view. That's a while, isn't it? Okay, well, be well. And, February 7th, make sure you tune in. Usman Nurmagomedov against Alfie Davis. It's going to be a kung fu extravaganza, and I'll be on comms. Looking forward to it. All right. Thank you all. Thank you, my love. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, everybody listening. See you next time.